What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and we have created a fun stat that I've been talking about a lot on this podcast. It's called non-competitive rate. We don't have an article out on it yet, but as we mess around with it, we have a wonderful leaderboard. We're going to talk about it today. And who better to talk about this kind of stat than my good friend? I was like, you know what? It might be, I know it's crazy, but I might bring him on to this show. It's Eno Saris. Eno, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I think this is going to be a fun exploration in real time of the kind of stuff that we do where we, you know, we develop a new stat. We hope that it's predictive. We test that it's predictive qualities. But while we do that, we're always looking for outliers. We're always looking for places where, oh, wait, this doesn't line up with what I expected, or this doesn't line up with the other stats. And so we've used some nice color coding Excel wizardry, hopefully, to highlight some interesting players that that non-competitive rate kind of picks out and says something interesting about.
Absolutely. So non-competitive rate is the chance of it's 95% chance of an auto ball. So it's pretty much just like, these are the ones that are using PLV. Nothing's going to happen except the ball here. They just throw it in. It's just a wasted pitch, completely non-competitive. So reducing those just innately, right? Good thing. You don't get into worse counts. You don't have as many walks.
What is it?
You're not, you're actually executing something that might have a good outcome for you otherwise.
How is it related to waste pitches in Savant?
So waste is an actual location. So there are scenarios that you can imagine. Maybe a wasted one actually gets a swing. Maybe it's an 0-2 count, something along those lines. This is one where it's just completely through PLV, which honestly, I imagine there's a massive correlation between. But we didn't want to call this waste percentage because that would just be, by definition, that location, not what we're doing. This is non-competitive, which is using our pitch model.
So literally, like, this probably won't happen a lot, but somebody could throw a pitch that's so bad by stuff that it's non-competitive.
Yes. I mean, sure.
But that's probably of, like, it slipped out of your hand, or
right.
It's an
yeah, absolutely. Or something. I see like what you're saying. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, if it's like down the middle, though, it's going to be competitive in the sense that it could return a strike, right?
Right.
Yeah, even if it's the worst stuff thing in the world, it's just like still going to be there.
So there's a location. Location figures heavily endless. And that's completely why we put up not only stuff plus, but location plus. So you could see how the different models are dealing with this, and it's not a perfect mapping. I mean,
no,
that's the first thing that comes across, is that yes, generally the poor location plus pitchers have a high non-competitive percentage.
Right. So we're going to show this to you guys. You should be watching on YouTube right now. If you want access to this spreadsheet, I'll be sharing it inside of the Discord. In the pitcherless Discord. So if you have PL Plus, PL Pro, you'll have access to it and you'll be able to check it out. If you're watching YouTube right now, you'll see this beautiful thing on the screen, which is our leaderboard. And non-competitive percentage, you should just think off the top of your head, who are the kind of guys that this would lean into? Well, it would lean into those who are generally efficient. They're just throwing more strikes, or at least
I'm really
having an opportunity to throw strikes.
List.
Sorry?
I watched Jason Adam a fair amount. I guess he yanks his breaking ball.
I think I might have actually filtered him out because I put it at 45. But I want to say that he's near the bottom of this one. He's at 13.6%. That is the 12th worst. Looks like of actually I don't know. This is I got to redo this one more time here. No, he's the third worst.
Yeah.
He's the third worst non-competitive over 40.
Let's have
innings.
The sheets on the same filter. So you're using 45 innings.
I was. Now I'm going to do a 40 just for that purpose of that. Right, 45 just gets rid of all those relievers. Like Brandon Hanafy is the second worst one. Yara Rodriguez, Jimmy Hergert.
Let's use 45 because I prefer to look at the starters. And if you use 45, look at number one. It is exactly what you'd expect. It's definitely Jack Leiter. And And there's no real discrepancy. His location plus is one of the worst among starters at 91. You know, you expect to see Gavin Williams here. His location plus is 92. We've been talking about how Bryce Miller lost his fastball command this year. He's at 93. So already there's a correlation, but it's like you do see some green. Like if you're looking at this on YouTube, you'll see that there are some green location plus numbers near the top of the non-competitive.
Now, so I do want to note here is that I messed up Eno a little bit because I had a filter for 100 stuff plus or higher. And that's the fun part about this is that we are going to be looking at non-competitive. And this is a thing that a hypothesis I've had for a long time of saying we take stuff plus and we take non-competitive. And while location plus in many ways is just more applicable, it also favors a lot of called strikes, for example. And non-competitive is pretty much saying, look, if you have a ton of stuff and you are not throwing these pitches that are just trash for you, just absolute negative, then I would wonder if that is better than location plus. That's been a theory I've had of just, I'm curious to see if there are things that we can pick out from it. So doing a filter of at least 100 stuff plus, Jack Leiter is the top one at 13% non-competitive. And just so you guys have an understanding, just as we look through this, the guys who are bad at a non-competitive have essentially have like an 8 or 9% or higher. It's kind of like the middle ground of it. Maybe 10. We just want to say, oh, avoid 10%. In a certain game, I did this last night as an experiment. Like Hayden Birdsong's four-seamer was an 18%. I'm like, boy.
Wow. And he was really, right? He had lost it. He lost it to the point where people stopped swinging.
Right. So there are times that, you know, you see, like, I'm sure if I did this back to Blake Snell's slider, you know, it would be something like 25% of those were just non-competitive, right? But in general, overall, you're going to see something like a range of about 5% at the best to about 15% at the worst for non-competitive rate overall on pitches. And then we actually have it separated out who has the most competitive and the least competitive by pitch type as well inside of this, which is really cool. But going back to this with Eno, the 100 stuff plus, right, Jack Leiter, I think it's so interesting about it is you also added to yours, which is great, a stuff plus and a swing strike rate expectation, same with location one. So tell people about that a little bit and what does it showcase inside of this leaderboard?
So that first column that it says S plus swing strike plus, that's what the model expects Jack Leiter's swing strike rate to be. So it says, if it was just based on his stuff, he would have a 15.4% swing strike rate. He actually has a 10%, which is right next to it. But then there's another one that says, based on his pitching plus, this is what it is, and that includes locations, this is what his swing strike rate would be. And so you can already see that his inability to throw competitive pitches is costing him when it comes to swing strikes. Right. That's not something we think of right away. We think of, oh, you'll get your swing strike rate from your stuff and you'll get your walks from your locations. Mm-hmm. But your locations will lead to poor outcomes in terms of batted balls if you're down middle, and they'll also lead to fewer swing strikes. I find number two on this list a little bit more interesting because what we have with Freddy Peralta is a guy who has a 103 location plus. Mm-hmm. The model says he should be getting more swing strikes across the board, and says that because his location plus is high, he should be getting even more swing strike than his stuff suggests he should. And yet he's getting less than his stuff suggests he should. And maybe there's some evidence here that it's capturing something that location plus is ignoring, because you look at the heat maps for Freddy Peralta's fastball, he misses high a lot.
Yeah.
Like he does not have great high fastball command.
It's called Professor Chaos with Freddy Peralta. Is that there are these days where it's just like, cool, he's got that down, and then he just doesn't, and it's chaotic. And This has been his case for years. Actually, I think when I introduced CSW at First Pitch Arizona, I used Freddy Peralta as the example of just like the eye test, guys. There's things that we can look at here. So yeah, completely non-competitive rate, just not fun for Freddy Peralta.
But, you know, still manages to be a pretty good pitcher. I just wrote his, because my ranks go up next week and I'm writing the blurbs, and I just wrote his blurb and I was like, you know, for three straight years, he had a bad first half and a good second half. Obviously, that's not predictive, because the year before that, he had a bad second half and had a good first half. What actually that thing is telling us is he just goes into streaks, you know?
Yep.
And obviously, we talk all the time about, like, how can you get in and out of a streak on time? And with Freddy Peralta, the draft acquisition price, the overall rating is so high that people probably aren't just going to drop him when he gets into a bad streak. They're just going to say, oh, he'll play to what he's done in the past.
Right.
But the streaks are probably related to his ability to command the ball. Maybe, you know, I don't usually use location plus like this, but maybe non-competitive can help you with this way, or maybe location plus in a rolling manner can tell you he's just lost the plate. So, you know, I don't know. I think that there is some opportunity here for non-competitive rate to give us a better sense of who has a good command or not. Now there's another guy a little bit lower where I'm not sure I agree with the non-competitive rate, or I'm not sure it's adding value. Like Michael King.
Yeah, right. So I was really curious about that one. Like, how does that happen? And actually, I'm not too surprised, because it's this four-seamer that's really dragging it.
Mm-hmm.
And how Michael King uses it is mostly to get whiffs upstairs. He's trying to elevate and get out of there, you know, trying to surprise it. And there are a lot of times that you see guys like Zach Eflin actually has a really bad one, I believe, on his four-seamer too. But he only uses his four-seamer, which is not a good stuff four-seamer, just in 0-2 counts to get swings out of the zone. So it doesn't surprise me that they miss too far
location
up
plus,
5 times.
Location plus is count and pitch type adjusted.
Right.
So maybe it's not, like, I am looking at his spray chart for the four-seamer. Michael King has, similar to Freddy Peralta, actually, like, just a lot that are just like way above the strike zone.
And the thing is, Michael King has a sinker though, and he has a sweeper and a changeup, and the sweeper 7.5%, his changeup 6.5%, non-competitive, right? 20% on the four seamer. That's what's dragging this down a lot. There is 11% on the sinker, but as I'm looking at this a little bit, I'm trying to get a sense of just sinkers in general. Are they more or less likely to be non-competitive? And it does kind of look like they are. Again, as Eno said, we are figuring this out. This is us having fun for the first time.
With a lot of people data. Throwing sinkers down here at the bottom. And I wonder, since you're using PLV, like, maybe the threshold for a non-competitive pitch is affected by the stuff of the pitch, basically. And usually this, you know, stuff for sinkers is lower than four seamers.
Right.
So
yeah. The filthy of this stuff, it's the most ridiculous two-seamer ever. It's going to look like it's down the middle of the plate and then go out of the zone dramatically, and they'll still swing, right? So if it doesn't have a lot of movement to it, then it's not going to be ever thought as a strike. And the more run it has, the better it'd be. So actually, it's interesting looking at the first five that I see that have a 100 stuff plus on their sinker, or just in general, and these are the five lowest non-competitive rates on their sinker, is Paul Skeens, Max Fried, Spencer Schmalenbach, Sandy Alcantara, and Framber Valdez, right? And then after that, then you get to Steven Matz, Ryan Yarbrough, Brian Wu.
You sorted for fastball non-competitive.
So yeah, non-competitive of sinkers.
Four seam. Oh, of sinkers.
Sinkers specifically. So then if you get to the top.
But they all have great sinkers.
Well, right. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm trying to say, right?
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. Then you have Bryce Miller, Charlie Morton, Will Warren, Logan Webb, Chad Patrick, Jordan Hicks as the worst ones with at least 100 stuff plus overall.
Wow.
Which is interesting to see that. I mean, really, Logan Webb is honestly the surprise one. I'm not too surprised about Will Warren.
Maybe it's just because the strike zone is so vertical and sinkers are going across it.
Mm-hmm.
you know, yeah, I'm surprised by this result.
Oh, this is so fun. Okay.
Because I also think that a lot of those guys have good command. Now, I don't think Fromber does.
Right. But Fromber throws them competitively. Right. Yeah. And that I think that's the idea of this is like, what I get upset about Framber Valdez isn't that he's throwing strikes with a sinker, is that he throws them down the middle, you know, and that those get hits at times. And then all of a sudden now he's a hip or nine of like 8 to 9 that inflates his whip a bit. But, you know, the curveball is just so good. And it's just like, fine, the curveball's woken up, guys. It's so fun with Framber Valdez. But yeah, I mean, I'm seeing this again. I then took away the top, the filter 100 stuff plus. And looking at the worst sinker non-competitive rates, we have Bryce Miller, Jose Berrios, Cade Povich, Landon Roop, Michael Lorenzen, Bryce Elder, Quinn Priester, Charlie Morton, Brady Singer. It's not really a shock.
But the whole story on Quinn Priester right now is that he's locating the sinker so well.
Right? I mean, the slider is amazing, but yeah, he's been throwing so many sinkers just like whatever down the zone. So I'm surprised.
So my theory is that
14%.
That you're going to have higher non-competitive rates on side-to-side pitches. So I wonder, I do see some sweepers down here, but they're competitive. Like I'm looking still at the starters sorted by non-competitive to the, you know, where you're not right. Competitive. So Jack Light is at the top. And I do see a fair amount of sinkers here. My theory would be, it's you might throw more non-competitive pitches if they're side to side movement.
So
because
I would say
strike zone is skinnier than it is.
Well, here's the thing: like if I think we're on the same page that more stuff means less non or fewer non-competitive pitches, right?
Yeah, I do.
So the more side to side you go, then the fewer non-competitive because
your stuff goes up.
Right. So actually I started by sweepers here and there are only five sweepers that are above 10% and Bailey Ober
and the models love the sweepers.
Oh yeah. Bailey Ober 15%, Logan Allen's 15%, Max Fried. I didn't even know Max Fried had one 13%, Gavin Williams 10% and Mike Vassell at 10%. Right.
And none of those guys throw the sweeper a lot.
Right. Ben Kaspari is at 1%. Wow. Andrew Abbott at 2%, right? That kind of explains it a little bit. He's just so consistent with his sweeper. Tyone and Crochet are up here. Trevor Williams is the lowest non-competitive across all of his pitchers.
One thing I am noticing here is you can have an overall high non-competitive, and it's because you don't have great fastball command. Mm. But we have seen some players that have found their way around it. So when I have this sorted by non-competitive rate, Jack Light at the top, I see Will Warren and Ryan Pepio as two pitchers that have above average location pluses in the top here. And hell, throw Michael King in. This actually fits for him too, which is they have high-ish non-competitive percentages on their fastballs, but they don't have that same problem on their secondaries.
Yeah.
So Ryan Pepio, what is the story with Ryan Pepio? He found the hard slider.
Yep.
And look at that. That has a 6.7% non-competitive. Now his four seam, he does spray above the zone, and that's what got him the poor command grades coming up through the minors, right? And this goes to my ongoing theory that one of the easiest ways to fix command is not, you know, what we used to think is fix the mechanics so that they repeat every time. I mean, sure, try that. and the second one has been, you know, just give them one target. That's good too. That's like thinking about misses and stuff. But I think the easiest way to fix command is to change the pitch mix. So for Ryan Pepio, it was, hey, let's throw a hard gyro slider that's basically a cutter. Why is that going to help you? It has very little movement. The gyro slider is called the 0-0 slider, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, now you can use that when you really need a strike. You know, it's kind of Joe Boyle was trying that a little bit. Will Warren, I think, has really taken off, especially against left-handers recently. What I've seen him do is just go to all breaking balls.
Yep.
And changeups. Mm-hmm. Like, he throws very few fastballs to lefties. And he used to be walking all the lefties because he throws a lot of non-competitive fastballs.
Yeah.
You know, recently he's had more success by sort of altering his pitch mix. So I don't know how, I don't know if you even want to legislate that out. You want a one number. But if you're going to start using this for analysis, I would look across their pitches as you have in this to kind of see, do they have a pitch that they can throw? So this is where Gavin Williams, yes, awful command on basically all of his pitches, except for the cutter.
Right.
And I don't want to just fall in love with him and like keep banging my head against the ground, against the wall with him, because he hasn't been pitching that great. And we know that he has really bad command, and this backs it up again, but Location Plus told us that too. But he does have one pitch he can go to. I guess maybe you want to see two pitches in the green.
I mean, so absolutely. And it used to be the four-seamer. Like, the four-seamer was actually a 65% plus strike rate. It's just now it kind of isn't. He's the most maddening guy I've seen this year of changing every single start of what you're going to get. And we just saw under 60% strikes yesterday from Gavin Williams. But right, the cutter.
It was a really disappointing start.
You know, can I just hear you say it once right now that this is in fact the year of the cutter?
It's the year of the cutter, baby.
Yes, here we go. Oh my gosh. All right. There's a lot more to dissect with this. I do actually want to go over pitch by pitch a little bit and see if there really are some outliers. Like, wait, hold on a second. This is actually maybe something we can find with who has those reliable sliders and cutters and changeups and curveballs, non-fastball pitches that maybe can showcase a little bit more about what is generally a good blueprint for success. We're going to talk about all of that stuff after this break. So, Eno, the first thing I'm going to do before we even go into secondaries, right, is I'm first going to take this entire thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Let's get this out of here. Let's just get this out of here for a little bit, okay? So we can look and see a non-competitive rate with four seamers. I'm going to take off the stuff plus condition, which for some reason is I can't. Which is wonderful. how did that happen? How'd you do? Okay, good. Thank you so much. Now we are going to go non-competitive on four seamers, and oh boy, this to me
somehow Jacob Lopez still has a good look.
Well, that actually, Jacob
Lopez, these are stinker guyers at the top, I guess. Elder, King.
Oh yeah,
Lopez.
I mean, again, Zach for Bryce Wilson. Walker Buehler, Jeffrey Springs. Really, these are guys who do not want you to hit their fastball.
Yeah.
Like, they get damaged off their four-seamer, right?
Didn't we talk about it on this show that Griffin Canning's whole idea right now is to throw his secondaries inside the zone, his fastballs outside the zone?
Yes, that is the dream, because unfortunately he's out for a very long time. He's just going to be dreaming of it. But yes, it's exactly right. He's just like, oh gosh, I do not want you to touch my four seamer. Just going to get it out of the zone as much as I can. Please try and hit my slider and my changeup. 100%.
Yeah.
That. That's actually what Ronel Blanco did during his fantastic campaign last year. Was he wanted you so badly to hit his slider that he rarely gave you a four seamer to hit, right? And that's kind of what Jacob Lopez has been trying to do. He just didn't do it at all in his last start. But this is really revealing to me of just, where is a stud here, really? I mean, I guess Michael King, as we talked about.
Again, Michael King, two secondaries that are in the green, and the sinker, his actual primary fastball, is not that bad.
It's 11.3 here. I'm going to go the reverse now. And yes, we do see, as I mentioned before, Trevor Williams, who has nothing nothing worse than a 6% on, which is his changeup. But you're going to see Rasmussen. You're going to see Imanaga.
Here's some high stuff four seamers. Rasmussen's like, I'm comfortable throwing my four seam in the zone.
But you also have Wheeler and Gausman and Pablo Lopez, Sonny Gray, Hunter Green, Scooble, Paddock, Joe Ryan.
A good place to be.
Right? These are guys who are attacking and comfortably so. It doesn't surprise me a ton, but I would also imagine the location pluses are also very good, you know, across the board for these pitchers.
I mean, you can see it in their overall location plus. Yeah. The what I found surprising, if you go back to the low, I find surprising that there are people here that don't have great fastballs that are still going in the zone.
Yes.
Like a Miles Michaelis is a little surprising to me. Eflin, I think, is a little surprising to me. Pallante, you know. They don't have the greatest stuff, so I'm a little surprised that they're so willing to go in. I will say that some of the guys who have lower stuff numbers also have a sinker. So what you can, I guess what you can do is I'm going to play in the zone with three fastballs. That's like Nick Martinez, right? Or Sonny Gray, or I guess even Kyle Freeland, Drew Rasmussen, three fastballs in the zone, but he has more stuff. So that's not my point. My point is more, you know, I guess if you have three fastballs, you can play inside the zone with three mediocre fastballs.
Right. What I would say is also, what's so interesting here is like Andre Pallante's is a cut fastball. So I think for him, like I've seen him also increase his velocity, fortunately, from like 92, which is still better.
He's now like
95, 96. Yeah. And it's a cut fastball, which means you can kind of get away with it more in the zone for weaker contact than other traditional fastballs.
But explain me, Miles
Michaelis. Don't say that he's good. Don't get me wrong.
Miles Michaelis.
the thing I'm seeing here is that it's a slider. He's a dancing with a disco type. Doesn't really throw his changeup that much. And the curveball is not competitive and the sinker is less competitive. So he has to throw strikes somehow. That's kind of what I'm thinking with Michael.
There's also maybe if you add a little bit of a stuff threshold and use non-competitive together, I feel like you really can nail it. Like he's at 88 stuff plus.
Yeah.
Like you could literally
put it at 95. Is that what
I mean? Yeah. Like if you put it at 95, then almost every pitcher on this list, at the very least, usable. And if not,
Cal Freeland exists. Okay, so we'll do 98. We'll do
no, it's fine. It's whatever. It's just Colorado. It's like nobody, you know, you could be a really good pitcher in Colorado.
Fair enough. I'm just having a ball with that.
I like that Colton Gordon is up here because I've been struggling to tell people why I think Colton Gordon is okay. And I know it's partially because I have a bias towards deep leagues. And so I'm not saying that Colton Gordon is like a 10 team guy.
Well, right. No, I don't think anyone really translated that.
But when I watch Colton Gordon, non-competitive tells me something about what he's like. The fact that he's in the zone, and he's in the zone with sort of interesting shapes. It's terrible velocity, so Stuff Plus doesn't love him, but it doesn't hate him. Yeah. And, you know, he's just very competitive is how I would describe him. I mean, he throws this big old sweeper, and he knows when to throw it, and he throws it to opposite hands, and he doesn't care. Like, look at his mix. Four seam sinker sweeper, and he's a lefty that throws like 90. I love it. There's something about it that doesn't make sense, but it does make sense. And I'm happy that non-compete kind of tells a little bit more of a story with him.
Oh man. And now Kyle Bland, of course, is in our chat on YouTube. And I'm just like, oh, Kyle, of course, what we need to do now is add mistake rate into this. And then have, non-competitive plus mistake rate. And combine that, because mistake rate, if you guys don't know, using PLV again, it's double the chance that it will allow a hit. So
that should go up when non-competitive goes down, because
if you combine mistake rate and non-competitive, these are the two extremes of bad pitches, right?
So Joe Ryan might have a high mistake rate, if I'm just guessing, because he will throw in the middle of the zone.
But then he won't, but it's competitive, right? So this is what Kyle's saying about Miles Michaelis, is that Michaelis has a horrific mistake rate. Right? So you see non-competitive, fine. All right, you can do it. But it's like, don't do it, though. Please go more like Griffin Canning, getting out of the way.
I'd be interested to see what Colton Gordon's mistake rate is like. Yeah, I could look that up.
That would be on his player page on Pitcher List that I'm not going to go to right now. But I do want to mention Ryne Nelson. He's here at 39, and he has a 108 stuff plus. He has an 8.8% swing strike rate with the predicted swing strike rate through stuff plus at a 13.5 and 13.6 with pitching plus. And he has generally a low non-competitive rate, at 8.6. What's so interesting to me is I think the biggest fault of Ryan Nelson hasn't been his four-seamer. It was just so absurdly good against the Giants if you saw it on Monday night. It was so fun. But it's always, okay, you're throwing that 70-plus percent of the time. Do you have anything else to throw that you can actually get strikes with or at least compete with? And what I'm seeing here is a 6% on his cutter and a 4.6 on his slider. And I'm wondering, can you up that usage of that cutter and that slider and actually create a more well-rounded approach here? That might be something to note because that four-seamer is just so good. And the only thing really holding him back is the fact that guys kind of know that it's coming.
He's done something to his slider.
Has he?
Oh, it's got a little bit less drop. It's a little bit harder. I thought I saw something over the course of the season too.
Also, Kyle Bland just put mistake rate inbound. drop ship.
I'm looking at Colton Gordon's page, by the way. And where would I find it?
You would find it inside of the individual pitches. So you go to repertoire, and then you would go to I believe mistake rates at the end of it. And we can just go to all pitches in the pitches tab.
Okay, all pitches in the pitches tab. There we go.
And then you'll see the
mistake rate. MTK?
Yep.
No? That's mistake rate.
That's just mistake rate, yeah.
So what's high?
You should see it there. League average should be there, and so would percentile ring at the bottom of the table.
I don't see it in the bottom of the table.
No. All right. I'll show you guys exactly here on YouTube.
7.5% for the four-seamer mistake rate for Gordon.
That is bad.
Oh, that's bad.
That is a bad mistake rate. So, starting pitcher MLB percentile, it's 30th, and then average is 6.3. So you'll see it if I zoom in all the way over here, you guys can see it, 7.5% on his four-seamer this year.
Okay.
And then I see it overall in all the different pitches, you see this.
Okay.
You got
okay. So, yeah, he's a little bit maybe too much in the center of the zone.
Yeah.
A little bit. Ryan Nelson, what was it that I saw on his pitches?
So, I'm just, look, I see at this and I figured to myself, okay, we must not be competitive a lot on these secondaries because he's not really turning to them, but that's a little bit exciting for me. I'm looking at Tyler McGill, slider at only a 6%. Jacob deGrom has a 2% non-competitive on his slider, which is just incredibly fun. But yeah, it's just a fun way of trying to grasp how volatile these guys are. If you want to take a look at some of the lower guys on... say, I'll rank this right now by slider. Luis L. Ortiz has the least competitive slider. Oh, God.
And look, and that's too bad because, you know, with the sinker there and the changeup, I think he just has that slot that's like sinker changeup guy.
Right.
And if he actually had good slider command, he'd be a much better pitcher, I think.
Mm.
And you look at his stuff plus expected swing strike rate versus his pitching plus, it's he gets what his pitching plus tells him he gets, you know, because he does actually have bad command.
So of course Kyle Bland is amazing. We've got this here. This is a mistake rate plus a non-competitive rate. You want to be low on this. Number one is Jacob Latz. This is on four seamers specifically, but number two is Shota Imanaga.
Most mistakes.
The fewest mistakes plus mistake. Non-competitive. So these are it's like the bands of not being extreme bad, right? Via extreme bad ball, extreme bad strike, right?
Uh-huh.
Zach Wheeler's on here. Tarek Skubal's on here. Glasnow's on here. Sonny Gray, Mackenzie Gore. Louis Varland, surprisingly, is third, which is nuts to me. And then you have, if we reverse this, from the highest, oh my gosh, this is like the worst collection that I've seen. I don't know if you were seeing this. Is in the four seamer tab at the bottom of your Excel sheet that Kyle Bland just came in and just destroyed it. Zach Eflin, Dustin May, Bryce Wilson, Bryce Elder, Adrian Hauser, Jorge Lopez, Emerson Hancock, Jack Konawitz, Jacob Lopez, Springs, Brady Singer, Charlie Morton, Kelvin Vaucher.
Who's the best pitcher on this list? Who's the best pitcher on this list? Charlie Morton?
Brady Singer? Jacob Lopez?
I mean, Zach Eflin, I guess, because it's like the two strike one.
I've been out on Jacob Lopez. I've just been telling people that Park, I think, is only going to get harder. He throws like 89. He does do one thing that's interesting. Lopez changed his cutter so it had more ride, and now his cutter has more ride than a sinker.
That's interesting.
And so I think that his cutter, I think it's a short-term blip where people are like, what is that pitch? You know? And I think at some point somebody will say, stop calling it his cutter, just call it his four-seam, and you'll hit it. And I think they'll hit it. Yeah. So I don't think Jacob Lopez is going to last. Also, think about how the market valued him. He was a throw-in in the Jeffrey Springs trade to get Joe Boyle. Like, the market didn't value him highly.
Right. So the thing with Jacob Lopez, and I did a video on him on the Pitcherless channel, which is it's 100% command focused. And it's frustrating.
How can you say that? He has bad command.
He goes back and forth. Like, he had horrible command yesterday. But if you watch that game that he had, where he was,
that's going to happen if you don't have good stuff. It's going to be
right.
You live and die with your command.
But it worked. This is the thing. It was like, you watch that game. He deserved it because he leaned in on a right-handed focused lineup, the Astros, and which plays into his whole thing of, hey, cool, I'm going to throw four seamers that you want to hit so badly, just out of the zone, not making any, not leaking over the plate at all. So then you're going to try and lean out and try and hit those. I can't tell you enough. Like, I never see batters swing at fastballs middle and off the plate away. It's just one of the easiest thing to say, like, no, I'm not going to swing at that. And you got guys swinging in this one because they just so badly wanted to hit this thing. It's the Ryan Yarbrough, but like 4 miles per hour harder. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Of like the changeup being off the plate too, the sweeper being underneath it. Oh, here's a backdoor cutter. Gotcha. You know, like, that's the whole thing.
If you force him into the zone, he's screwed.
Well, the thing is, he does it, but it's when you think it's the four seam or you think it's something else, right? He's just playing with that completely. And it was incredibly effective. I mean, when he gets a changeup and the sweeper over, those aren't bad pitches. Those work. Those are fine. So it worked before. It's like, I don't know if it's going to keep going. It was, what, 2 or 3 starts of nailing that. And then it didn't. I was like, okay.
I think that, you know, this analysis is also why Brian Bayo's new cutter is a big deal. Because, you know, I don't think he has the command to play that Jacob Lopez game, you know?
No, absolutely not.
And that's what this stat is saying. Brian Bayo was in the bottom 10. And the cutter can at least be something that he can throw in the zone. So,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Man, so the top of this list is not necessarily, if we go back to it, the top of this list is not necessarily only the very best in baseball.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we have, there's Tanner Scott in there too. These are,
surprising me that we think he has bad command.
He's a reliever. He's a reliever. You know, I got nothing for Tanner Scott. He's a lovely extension guy. Good flat.
Okay, so let's look at starters. Are there bad starters here? Not really. I guess
not really. No.
Zach Wheeler, Tarik Skubal, Cole Sosa is a reliever.
Jansen Junk is in here.
Wow.
But also he's the sample. Yuri Perez and
Yuri Perez is not commanding the ball well. So this is surprising to me.
Well, so he isn't throwing mistakes because he throws so hard. So, and where he's putting it is not ideal for him. He does have more non-competitive at 10%. So this is a benefit of him, of stuff being like, yeah, this is fine. If you just throw it down the middle, it's not double the chance of being a hit because you throw it so hard. And also, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that Eury has his arm angle versus vert is very good. So
yeah,
it's much more of a deceptive four-seamer. That allows it to then succeed inside the zone. So
but
this
if
is
I'm
pretty
looking
just
for
saying,
a reason
stop.
Why he's struggling, you know, mistake plus non-compete is not going to tell me that.
Right.
And in effect, location plus would maybe be doing a better job telling us why he's struggling because.
Yeah. So keep in mind, this is for four seamers only.
Okay.
So that makes a lot more sense, I think, of just understanding.
Because I think his slider command is gone, just like
right.
Sandy's was.
Right. He had one game of it being better and one game of it being better with his curve too. And I just wish he had a changeup, because watching these games of Eury Pérez throwing these four seamers that they know are coming and they should generally be good, but you can't throw anything else. So they're just fouling that thing off. Oh gosh.
I can't tell you this is sourced knowledge and that I'm sure that this is what the Marlins do, but I am so sure that this is what the Marlins do from the outside, because A, this is what most teams do, which is don't throw your slider to your back. You know, from Tommy John, don't throw your slider, throw your fastball for a while and then throw your sliders. And now we've seen two prominent pitchers come back from TJ without their breaking ball command. I feel pretty passionately that when you're throwing 85 coming back from TJ with your fastball, you should be throwing a 70 mile an hour slider. You should be throwing both of them on your way back, because when you get to the big leagues, you want to be able to throw everything again.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, absolutely.
I'm a little surprised on Paul Skeens. But one thing I've noticed about Paul Skeens and his four seam is that, if this is still four seamers.
No, we actually just got to sinker, I took a sip of coffee at the wrong time. I had to deal with it. You know, I needed a moment because I just saw the news that everyone else is seeing inside of chat that Spencer Schwalenbach has a fractured elbow.
Oh, my God. I just wrote his blurb where I said the only thing to worry about is the fact that he's throwing so hard and he's never thrown this many innings. Oh my God, dude.
But wait, I don't know why it's a fractured elbow though. Like, he was supposed to start today, so maybe there was a thing in the game. Maybe not. No, I don't know.
I'm sure you can fracture your elbow throwing. What happens is the ligament, there's a type of fracture, I have this, where the ligament pulls the bone apart.
Oh, fun.
So the ligament ends up being stronger than the bone. And I mean, it may not be, I don't even know if he's out for the season necessarily, depending on all the specifics of what's in there, because basically you have surgery to push the bone back and then it's like a broken bone, like a fracture. And so you just have to wait till the fracture heals.
So this was
for a pitcher, you have to come back. Like for a hitter, if that happened, I would give him maybe 6 to 8 weeks or something. But for a pitcher, then you have to build back and everything. So it may be maybe the rest of the season.
So two things here. So he's saying that he's due back in September. That's what Mark Bowman reported.
Okay.
Also, I remember Jason Collette being so adamant, saying Spencer Schwalenbach, be careful, massive jump in innings last year.
But also this big velo increase. There's a piece called "Should We Overthrow" on Baseball Prospectus about in season big velo jumps. So I was just, I don't know. I no one's ever going to see that blurb, but you'll know about it.
Oh my gosh. For a second, like the way you acted, it was as if you just picked him off a waiver wire. I was like, that it can't be the case. So what are you going to react to a blurb? And yeah, I got that one. I would do that all the time when I do the list, and then all of a sudden, as I'm writing,
I feel better that I didn't just publish it, and now I have to be like, everybody would be like, everyone, why'd you put Spencer so high? And like, no, I didn't know.
I mean, I know this is a little off topic, but Atlanta should be selling at the deadline now.
Ay, ay, ay. Yeah, right? He was really single-handedly keeping him in. Like, who? And I want to ask you something. What do you think of Spencer Strider right now?
Oh, I know. No. Mm-mm.
No?
Well, okay.
Talk about it.
Problems. I mean, what is up with his vert?
Yeah. Why is the stuff not back? The velo is like creeping up, but the stuff's not back. But his strikeout rate is still good.
3 inches, you know.
But his strikeout rate's still good. Why?
Well, okay. So not every start has been equal with Spencer Strider. Okay.
That's true. There's been slightly bettering velo at least.
Yeah. This is, I'd say this is actually interesting to me, because Eno is so good at saying, hey, look, this is what they are in this bucket. And I'm like, oh, I'm not good at that, because I'm just like very much like start.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Right? So then we combine, you know, that's the whole thing. And so I'm like, hey, I followed each one, and that fastball was at 94 to 95. And I'm like, oh, it's at 96. Now this is cool. Slider command, absurdly good for Spencer Strider. Oh my gosh, he took down the Rockies, which, by the way, if you face the Rockies, the thing you do is you throw your breaking balls down and away, and that's it. You just call it a day. Wow. And what's so funny to me is that Strider did that and he had a great time, but his four-seamer command wasn't very good. And Grant Holmes showed the next day, like, yeah, it's all about the slider, guys. It's not the fastball up to, like, it was 15 Ks from Holmes, right? And the four-seamer went from 17 inches of vert to 16 to 15 to about 14. It's like 14 inches of vert. And I'm going, what? But it's also a 96, but no. That can't. Well,
the one in Colorado, you can discount though, because it affects vert.
Oh no, it wasn't. No. It was Rocky Road on the road. I'm not even talking about that.
This was, yeah, it was Atlanta.
This was like 2 games ago. So what was it? Phillies. Yeah. 2 days ago. So like, I don't know what's going on. I think it's terrifying, and I think
I have no idea where to rank manager. I have him right now. I have him in my top 25 at 25.
Yeah,
because the projections are good. And I feel like I need to write a blurb about him. And I only write a blurb about the top 25. So I think I might keep him there. But, and it would look weird if I pushed him way down. But I might. I don't know. I don't know where to put him.
I'm at 28.
Yeah. It's kind of a place to stick people right now.
I guess it's 27 because Spencer Schwellenbach.
Yeah, right.
Oh my gosh. So Kyle has apparently added all pitch types, and I think he's working on the overall for mistake rate and then also mistake rate plus NC percentage because he's amazing. Yeah. So looking at sinkers really quickly of those who are starting pitchers, it's Max Fried and Rybulski, Casey Mize and Schwellenbach. And Paul Skeens, all for sinkers that are effective in both mistake rate and non-competitive combined. These are,
you know, one thing I have been noticing about Skeens, though, from our start and the start after that, is I do think he needs to throw the four-seam high in the zone more.
Yeah.
He's east to west at the bottom of the zone.
That's so funny you say that.
And it's not a great four-seam. And I know that people say, oh, don't throw a great four-seam up there, but... You know, people, I think, lock into him being east to west and low in the zone. And so they just sort of, they're like trying to opposite field him if it's away from them and they're trying to pull it. And they're making more contact recently.
Yeah. So, you know, it is, I got to say, it is so funny that you say this. Like, so among all the wonderful things that Kyle Bland does for me is he makes actually my spec sheet for the SP Roundup now. Mm-hmm. So every single night he gives me an HTML file I open, and I'll share it with you guys now, that lets you, let's pull this in a little bit so you guys can see.
So that's a little better than the game we watched.
Yeah.
In the game we watched, he did not have those four seams up there.
So you can also go through the different ones here, right? Now, here's the thing. He did this, right? A little bit more against lefties. But... it's very small text. However, you will notice that he only got 4 whiffs on 38 four-seamers thrown. Okay. And the thing I actually suggested is he should be throwing the splinker more. This is such an insanely good pitch to lefties. I can't express this enough.
He's been throwing the changeup more than the splinker.
Even against lefties, it was 2 for 6. It is so good. And I don't necessarily think this is going to be that good upstairs just because it is not a, a vert pitch, right?
Well,
I
think that both of us can be right in that. Like, I think he needs to go up there to set up the splinker and you know, he needs to go up there some, in the game that we watched against the Brewers. Oh, I don't think there were like 2 pitches that were in the high.
Yeah, line. No, he absolutely only lived. Yeah. Completely right.
So, like, I think he could go up there 4, 5, 6 times a game just to, like, put it in their head that he will go high in the zone.
Right.
And then, and I agree, the splinker, it's kind of weird that he's gone with a straight change over the splinker recently. So, I think Skeens could have a little tweak to get back on track. It's amazing that struggling for him is, you know, like a 2.5 ERA.
Yeah, right. Allowing 4 runs once.
Yeah.
Oh God. But it's a strikeout inning, and that is a very strange thing, right?
Yeah.
But I think I saw a stat where that was like the first time in recorded history that Paul Skeens has allowed 4 runs in a game. Something like that.
I am
like high school, college, you know,
I'm out on Quinn Priester partially because of the stat.
Right. So this is a sinkers, non-competitive plus.
And he's almost 50-50 sinker slider right now, Quinn Priester. Right. And if he's going to have the second or third worst mistake plus non-compete on the sinker among starting pitchers.
Yeah. That seems pretty
bad. Half of his pitches.
Yeah. That's that isn't fun for his sinker just being not a very good one. There's also the cutter as well that he kind of throws into the zone, but there is the curveball that showed up last time for Priester against lefties. And he actually did really good with that. The slider has always been there for Priester, but then again, that was Rocky Road. So
I know. And he's so,
we'll see if that actually sticks. I don't think so. I'm out on Priester because I just think it's just too bad of a sinker.
Yeah.
It's just, and Mitch Keller too, 30% of his sinkers are either non-competitive or a mistake. That is, that's the sound I'll use for that. Brandon Faughton is up here too. Merrill Kelly, Kumar Rocker, not a surprise to me. Kumar Rocker,
there is a command component. There's a shape component to his struggles, like that. Mm-hmm. Everything's a little bit sinkery, but there's a command component to Kumar Rocker's struggles as well.
I'm moving over here to cutters. Actually, no, I'll go to the other side of sinker just to give you guys another quick look at that again. You have Max Fried at the top there. Some other really good ones. Brian Wu.
Yeah.
Ranger Suarez. Framber Valdez. Really low mistake rate. 0.6% Sandy's mistake rate. We love the movement of the sinker so much. Even when it's the middle of the play, I guess we just love it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I should be kinder to a sinker. Maybe I should be. I've started to see the light, guys.
I have the opportunity try and buy Max Meyer in a keeper league. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, right. He's non-competitive. He was very consistent with locating the sinker. And it's not Tommy John. It's a hip injury. So The idea is that his arm should be all right for next year. Bailey Falter is here. Low mistake rate, 2.4%, 10% non-competitive. So 12.6%.
You keep saying that you think somebody else is going to unlock more. My point is, I think this is it.
No.
Yes, this is it.
No, Eno.
I think that he's not. I think he could go to another team and not be a major league pitcher.
Because it's the Pirates, and they're just like, whatever, just go out there.
No. I think that I think to some extent they're maximizing what he does. Like, he's throwing a ton of fastballs. He has a good extension. He has good command. He's throwing a ton of fastballs. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't
know what? Okay. My whole point about Bailey Falter would
unlock the next level of Bailey Falter. He throws 90. You know?
Okay. Hold. Just hear me out a little bit here. Okay. I do think that there is something to be said about changing scenery and getting just different voices and trying new things when it comes to unlocking a pitch type or two. Mm. Right. And so
you think that maybe there's a secondary in there
that's what he needs. They got, you know, there's got to be some.
I've talked to him about it, and I'm just experiment. Like. He's tried everything. That's how I feel. I mean, that's how he feels.
In one, okay, actually, not one organization, in like two Phillies, and now
it's only been two. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Phillies
okay.
A pretty good one too.
I'm just saying. Just saying the Rays are big. Yeah, but that extension is great. It's gonna be okay. All right. I do want to. If there's one or two more pitch types you want to look at here with mistake rate and non-competitive, which ones would they be? Slider, cutter, sweeper, curve, change.
Slider.
Slider. Here we go. So the best one. Oh, I'm telling you. Oh, man.
I have to think that this is really important.
At it. Mitch Spence, baby. Number one. 3% non-competitive.
All of my Mitch Spence shares are finally coming to fruition.
Oh, man.
Well, I had to really sit through those.
Now I got to see the cutter one, too.
I had to sit through him being a nothing reliever, dude. He's not bad. Because he has reverse splits. He can command his cutter pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, he's actually not bad.
So the thing about Mitch Spence is that it's cutter slider. I think both of them are very good, but they're not hard enough to be the Rasmussen yet.
Yes, right? he is like a I don't want to say it. That's offensive.
An Ashcraft Rasmussen,
the discount version of Drew Rasmussen.
Right, it is a softer version right now.
Yeah,
but the thing
I kind of like him.
Rasmussen has three, right? And the cutter really is a four seamer in my view. It just says it's cut four seamer. And the slider, cutter, whatever.
And Spence,
but he does have a sinker at times, and that's kind of the third thing that I feel like he needs to unlock to be more consistent.
George Kirby, there's a really interesting thread on Twitter by Chris Langan, who used to be a pitching coach at Driveline. And he was pointing out that George Kirby's slider.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. Actually, no, he was pointing out about his sweeper. Sorry.
Well, okay, good. Because then it's not going to be the same thing I was going to say. Great.
Well, he was saying that his sweeper, if you just look at velocity and movement profiles along with the best sweepers in the business, but it doesn't get the whiff rates that it should. Mm-hmm. And that he's been using it mostly to suppress balls in play. And he was making a likeness to like a bruising running back that never gets more than like 10 yards per carry. Like he's using it to just advance the game and not get the big punch outs, not get the big strikeouts. And that's a really weird usage of a sweeper. So, but I would just say that generally that fits in also with this slider, which is that the way I think of Kirby is okay stuff and just immensely great command. And so he's just going to get the most out of every pitch based on command. So I'm not at all surprised to see him at the top of this list.
So George Kirby, I got to say, man, thank you. Thank you so much. I've been banging my fist on the table for so long that you can't just throw fastballs and sinkers upstairs and then just like sliders and curveballs in the middle of the zone. You can't do that forever, right? You need to go Blake Snell blueprint. You need to go heat up, breaking stuff down. Eno talks all the time about how you're just such a good command artist. So why are you settling for less? Okay, go for the gold. And guess what? Last two starts in a row, that's what George Kirby has done. And he has gotten his slider down to the point that two starts ago, he had a bad strike rate on his slider. And I was so proud of him.
9%. He said that he's had to expand the zone. And yes. Also, when he first came back, his velo was really good, but his locations were terrible.
Mm.
And I think he missed a lot of spring. And so I think now we're finally seeing more of the regular Kirby. Like the command has really fallen back into place.
Also, you should be really happy I just moved past the whole football reference. How dare you? The slider going down, and that started as a 49% strike rate. It was only 18% CSW, threw it 37% of the time. And he still got through with that start. It made the four seamer better, the sinker as well. That was six innings of one run against the Twins. And then it was even better in this one against Kansas City. He was actually able to finally get it in that down and in town situation. 5 of 24 whiffs on it this time, 42% CSW on 24 sliders thrown. And that's the George Kirby I've been waiting for. That's it.
I also think this list is really interesting because you might say, well, you showed me this list and, you know, it was for the best slider command basically in baseball, this lowest amount of non-competes and mistakes. And it had Ryan Pressly and Edward Bizzardo and, the corpse of Clayton Kershaw and, Ryan Walker, who's been terrible, and Patrick Corbin. Why do I care about this? Well, I'd put forth that some of the names I just said would not be in the big leagues if they didn't have this skill.
Exactly. Like, yeah, everybody's a major leaguer for a reason.
He can at least do this. Yeah. And Clayton Kershaw still, I have a piece that's pre-written for his 3,000th strikeout about Clayton Kershaw's slider. And the thing that was so amazing about it was when it first came out, it was, one shape. Then when he was at his peak, it was 90 miles an hour with elite command. And then it fell off of that peak, but he still had the elite command. And like, just think of the fact that Clayton Kershaw has been averaging under 91 miles an hour for like 4 years now. And has an ERA around 3. And the thing that if you ask me, what does Clayton Kershaw do well right now? I would say elite command of the slider. And I don't know completely. If I have a lot much else to add to it.
No. I mean, look at the heat map of where he's located that slider in those games. It's been down middle. And that's incredibly tempting.
That Kikuchi would be in so much more trouble if he couldn't command the slider. That's like the only pitch he can really command.
I don't know who these guys are for a good reason. Okay. Oh, this is the other side of it, which is mistake rate plus non-competitive, but the bad end, right? You don't want a high number. And Emerson Hancock's the first starter. There's Luis Ortiz. Kumar Rocker is an interesting one because, you know, it certainly seemed like he didn't have it and then moved away from it. But now he has this cutter instead that is so good. I cannot express this enough. This is the pitch that's saving Kumar Rocker right now.
Yeah, I'm not throwing Kumar Rocker out, but yeah, there's a lot of issues there.
Oh, yeah. I see Cole Reagans is here.
I was going to say, because yeah. I'm still over on the overall sheet,
mm-hmm.
and Cole Reagans was popping as a guy that had poor mistake plus.
We have this. Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that Kyle even did this on the overall sheet. Oh, man, what am I doing? Okay, so let's compare this with the stuff plus guys. Mistaken and non-competitive. It's all these good ones. We have Aaron Nola, Shota Imanaga, Gilbert Wheeler, and on the bad side, Luis Ortiz, Dustin May, Mitch Keller, Chase DeLander, Quinn Priester, Chad Patrick, Sean Newcomb, Ben Brown, Jordan Hicks, Spencer Bivens, Keeter Montero. Where am I going to get to a good guy? Seth Lugo.
I guess Lugo's the best pitcher on this list.
Because he has like 8 and 9 pitches. So I guess he can get away with those mistakes.
Maybe also just game to game. You know, if he's lost command of one of them, he has 9 other ones he can try out.
I mean, I got to say, I'm really surprised to see Jack Leiter, Taj Bradley, and Hayden Birdsong and Osvaldo Bido all next to each other. Oh, wait, no, I'm not.
No, not at all. Oh, but look, Chris Bassett is probably the most Seth Lugo of...
Yeah.
That isn't Seth Lugo. I mean, Chris Bassett, you know, 10 pitches as well.
Yeah, Randy Vasquez in some ways is kind of acting like that. 5-6 pitches at times.
And poor command of all of them. But I think maybe you just show up at the park and you're like, which is the one that I have slightly better command of today?
Right.
Because I saw Randy Vasquez pitch really well against the Dodgers by just all of a sudden throwing tons of sweepers. And I was like, how much did you throw the sweeper before? What is this?
I mean, that's the thing is at the end of the day, if a pitcher is like, I don't know how I'm going to get through this. The secret is just throw like 45% sliders.
Yeah, right. It is.
I mean, that really, I can't express this enough. That's what Anthony DeSclafani did. That's what Lance McCullers did. It's how Zach Littell's gotten where he is at this point. It's how Miles Michaelis still survives.
Robbie Ray doesn't look great in this, I think, either.
Robbie Ray?
Yeah, Robbie Ray. So check this out. Robbie Ray has a 14.8% mistake plus non-compete, right? Mm-hmm. And Cole Reagans has a 15.3. And they're probably the best pitchers. I mean, you have Michael King and Sandy Alcantara up top, but you know they have their issues right now.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon is above them.
Shane Boz. Yeah.
But they're... I think they're surprisingly high on this list. I would say that Robbie Ray is following your advice, which is the slider is the thing. He can command the slider almost every time out. He can command the slider. He'll throw a ton of sliders and he'll just hope that either his fastball command is good or he'll throw some curves or some changes or whatever it is. He'll get through the rest of it. But throwing a ton of sliders is how Robbie Ray's gone through this. What's going on with Cole Reagans? Do you think this is maybe just a short-term blip that has to do with whatever he was dealing with before he went out?
Okay, so when I think about this, I think of this as an efficiency stat in many ways. Like, who are the ones that we know can consistently go 7 innings or not? Who are the ones that are going to tally quick pitch counts up, right? And the story of Cole Reagans is interesting. When I was so obsessed with him in 2023, called him a unicorn because he had 5 pitches he could throw for strikes and he knew how to command them. Putting him in the right spots, was throwing hard, all that stuff. And 2024 and 2025, we started to see the cutter and the slider really get shelved, especially the second half of 2024. Reagans became more of just a four-seamer changeup guy. And he had the high walk rate because he wouldn't ever give in. He would constantly, especially against lefties, you're like, just go a little too far on this. He wouldn't actually just so whatever, I'm just going to throw this over the plate and it'll be fine. And I think Robbie Ray is the same way too. Right. Of he does what he does and he's going to miss a lot of it, but whatever, I'll get back in the next one. And that's fine. I'm not actually too surprised to see both of them on this. And if you notice, both of them are not really mistake rate, guys. Like 4% for Reagan's, 5.7 for Ray. Right. These are the non-competitive side more, right?
Yeah.
And that doesn't surprise me. Freddy Peralta is here too, right? At 86. So the 15%, right? In between Reagan's and Ray. So I'm not too shocked about those things. You haven't seen Christopher Sanchez, which is actually really surprising to me. I would have thought of him. I'm talking about this as an efficiency stat. I would have thought that he would have a much lower than a 10% non-competitive rate personally.
He's also interesting because his walk rate suggests he has good command. And maybe from watching, you think he has good command. But his location plus says he doesn't have great command.
Right. I think that is the most shocking one here.
He's kind of like Fromber to me.
Yeah, I guess so.
I know it's a different secondary curve, change in curve, but like
it's a slider, but you take the slider and then change in reverse their importance, the breaker and the change. Yeah. But yeah, that is a really interesting one. I can't put my finger on it because the changeup is just so effective. I remember actually doing pitches per out. I think it was in 2024 we ran that and we saw that Sanchez was like one of the most efficient pitchers in baseball. Right. But you probably can't really do that if you have a mediocre not competitive rate, right?
Yeah, but maybe some double plays were erasing that, getting
That could be it. Absolutely. And also the Astros have turned so many double plays. There is one I want to talk to you about. Who's this guy? Is this Hunter Brown?
He's
10.3% non-competitive.
But he's in the green. He doesn't make mistakes. Crazy. He doesn't make mistakes.
Hunter Brown finally found a changeup and a curveball for lefties. I'm like, all right, fine.
Yeah,
you're an ace now. I have him at like nine.
He's been throwing the secondaries a little bit more.
Yeah, but that one's a weird one. But all right, so we got to end this. My gosh, I didn't realize what time it was. This is just really fun and fascinating. If you want to check out this spreadsheet, really, go check it out on the PitcherList Discord. I'm gonna give it to PL Plus and PL Pro members. But we're going to have some article on PitcherList the next week or two talking about both of these from NC percentage and mistake plus NC percentage. Because I think there are things that we didn't quite uncover as we are, using the machete right now and trying to get through this jungle of what we should make of it. I haven't seen quite enough yet to push away location plus at all, at the moment. So, I'm happy and disappointed at the same time,
but I like the with non-compete and mistake, like it gives you a sense. You can almost picture the heat map in your head, where you're like, if they're like more on the non-compete side and don't make mistakes, then they're just like kind of like this, and if they're really low in non-compete and high in mistake, then they're just like doing this, and so it kind of gives you a sense of like what kind of command they have. If they do both really well, you're like, oh duh.
Well, actually, it's funny, I used to call the mistake rate plus and NC percentage donut command, essentially.
Exactly. That's right.
Exactly. I'd say that. It's like it's either down the middle or way out of donut. It and you make a donut in between. So it is fun to see, also just looking at this one more time at the very top of it, I mean, these are all the studs. Really, I mean, this is just filled with them. It's Aaron Nola, Imanaga, Gilbert, Wheeler, Valdez, Ryan Yarbrough, Mitch Spence, Logan
all
Webb.
All the studs.
Yeah, Mitch Spence, Ben Kasparis is here.
Ben Kasparis, who had poor command grades in the minors.
Because it is, I think it's because of the sweeper and the cutter being highly graded, and those being two of his most thrown pitches, with a four-seamer as well, which isn't a bad one. Which means that you're not going to have as low of a mistake rate as others, but only an 8% non-competitive is pretty good. Jesus Luzardo, Max Meyer, Jacob DeGrom, Mackenzie Gore, Ryan Nelson. Oh my gosh, Ryan Nelson. Paul Skeens, Tyler Anderson. Wow. Tyler Alexander, otherwise known as T-Lex.
Andrew Abbott.
And Andrew Abbott.
Might tell you more than his 101 location plus.
That actually, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Oh man. Ryan Gusto. And Patrick Corbin right ahead of Joe Ryan. Sliders, baby.
Like we all had it.
All right. But I think that's going to wrap up this episode. I hope you guys enjoyed this one of just listening to two guys just hang out and figure this thing out together. We'll probably have more about it at some point in the season as we get to reflect on it and dig a little bit deeper. But, so now that you got to get rid of the Spencer Schwellenbach blurb, What else can we expect from you at The Athletic?
Oh, just a flurry of content before I leave. I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks, taking the kids to Germany. So tonight, I think on Clayton Kershaw's 3,000 strikeout. It's basically just a love letter to a slider. I will have a piece on Logan Webb up hopefully tomorrow, where we interviewed him extensively and talked to all the people around him about his year this year and why the strikeouts are up and what he's done. A lot of cool stuff from him. Got a piece up today about the urgency index, which teams need starting pitchers in the trade deadline. And the new entry to that was the Mets. And I think the Mets could actually use a starting pitcher now because of all the injuries they've gone through. And I know they have the nice, interesting young pitchers, but they're going to be a team that's probably in the playoffs. Do they want to rely on Tidwell, Sproat, or McLain in the playoffs, or do they want to turn one of those guys into a stud that they can use? So that's up. And I'll have one piece that drops while I'm gone.
Oh, my gosh. And hopefully when you're back, I think it'll be in 2 weeks or
so. Oh, and rankings on Tuesday.
That's what I was going to say. We can probably do that one. Okay. As the All-Star break nears, and we'll have,
but the other one will be on makeup and
like foundation.
I hope you read it, because I actually think that could make for an interesting pod as well. It's about what makes a good ball player in the head.
Oh yes, I would absolutely love to talk about that with you more. But that is going to do it here. So go check out those pieces, of course, on The Athletic from Eno Saris. My name is Nick Pollock, who is expecting Zach Gallen to go to the Mets. And we will talk more about the craft of pitching again next week.